Hello and welcome to another edition of Critical Q&A, the show where I answer your questions based on what you've left for me in the comments section of my Q&A videos or have sent to me by email at askchrisshelton@gmail.com. I've been getting some really great questions, and I hope you guys like the selection this week. But first I wanted to mention that my Sensibly Speaking podcast this week has gone in a new direction, new format. It is just me now on my podcast, and I explain what that's all about in the show. So if you haven't checked it out, go check it out. And if you've checked it out before and didn't particularly like what you saw, well, check it out again, because we're going in a different direction. And I'll be talking about Scientology stuff in the near future on the podcast, as well as other things of interest to me that I hope are of interest and are informative and entertaining for you. So anyway, just putting that out there, that's there. It's new, it's exciting, it's different. And I'd like you guys to see what I had to say on that. It is the Sensibly Speaking Podcast 2.0. All right, so let's get to your questions for this week. Leo Taxel, I was wondering about Scientology's tax-exempt status. You always hear that if Scientology lost its tax-exempt status in the U.S., that it would pretty much be game over for them, yet it seems like in 90% of the countries they operate in around the world, they are not recognized as a religion and don't get tax breaks. If being tax-exempt here is such an issue, how is that not a hindering factor for them everywhere else? Do they funnel all the money from Europe, South America, and elsewhere to the safety of the American tax shelter? Do they enjoy tax exemption anywhere else or just the U.S.? Would losing it truly end them or just really hurt them? Okay, so yeah, tax exemption. This is a big issue for Scientology. Scientology has always been primarily a U.S.-based religion or religious activity, or, at least as far as it was founded in the United States. Hubbard was obviously an American, and pretty shortly after the whole thing got going, he started considering setting up a base of operations over in the United Kingdom because, of course, almost from day one, people were questioning him and calling him out with Dianetics and he was having to hop, skip, and jump around in order to avoid some of that attention from, government authorities and things like that. Once they got tax exemption, things chilled quite a bit, and also he had help organizationally in setting things up. So no, they're not. They're not tax exempt in a lot of places. They are tax exempt in some places outside of the United States. I can't remember right now off the top of my head which ones those are, but I do know that they do have tax exemption or religious recognition in other countries than just the United States. But the thing, regardless of any of that, France, they don't. Germany, they certainly don't. Belgium, I don't believe they do. The United Kingdom, they've never been able to get tax exemption or full religious recognition there, although they can now do weddings and things like that. But we have to remember that it has always been and will always be a U.S.-based operation. That is where the international management is. That is where the largest Church of Scientology, the Flag Service Organization in Clearwater, is based, and it's always going to be in the United States, because the United States is where they enjoy not just tax exemption, but First Amendment protection under the freedom of religion. And that gives them legal, as I've discussed before, a legal carte blanche to harass their critics, to be able to say and do just about anything they want when they decide to target somebody. And that has been, the United States affords them a lot of protection for that. So that's why it's so important that they maintain that tax-exempt status, because if they don't, they won't lose the First Amendment protections, the freedom of religion protection, or religious recognition, automatically if they lose tax exemption. But on the other hand, if they lose tax exemption in the United States, this opens the door to all kinds of taxes, property taxes, employment taxes, things like that. And the idea of having all of their employees, now being volunteers, and so they don't have to pay them a minimum wage and things like that. I believe that would also be called into question if they were to lose their tax-exempt status, their 501c3, protection. The property taxes alone would be a major hit on Scientology, especially in the United States, where they have more churches than I think they do in the rest of the world. Between the flag organization, between the Los Angeles organization, and all of the local churches and properties that they own, and the international headquarters and all that, tremendous amount of property in the United States. And all of that suddenly, subject to property taxes? Oh, man. And also, of course, the PR hit. Because if Scientology loses its tax exemption, everybody's going to know. Yeah, it's a religion, sure. I mean, they do that right now and they roll their eyes, and yet they're frustrated at the fact that the IRS grants them that exemption. So they sort of are forced to acknowledge that it's a religion. And of course, they have religious scholars and, apologists and all this sort of thing backing them up. Well, the IRS recognition gives them a lot of cred in that direction. So you asked if all the other countries are sending their money to the United States for tax shelter purposes. Yeah, absolutely they are. There's a statistic called Payments to Flag that every single Church of Scientology keeps. And it registers, and it shows how much money every week, which is a percentage of their income taken right off the top, goes to church management. In other words, straight up to international headquarters. Now that money doesn't, I don't know where it's kept in terms of what bank it's kept in. Maybe it's, Caymans, maybe there's tax shelters offshore, that sort of thing. Well, there definitely are. I also understand that the International Association of Scientologists has money, maybe over in England as well as in the, offshore accounts and whatnot, as well as in the United States. So there's, this big pot of money is not all sitting in one bank account. It is definitely spread around. They also have investments. They do stock investments and things like that with the money in order to get their money making money. So that's all very definitely controlled from the United States and protected in the United States because they're a tax-exempt organization. So it serves, as I understand it, it serves their interests for all that money to come to the U.S. That was one of the big problems Russia had with Scientology is they're sending money to the United States. And they're like, what is this? So, rightly so, right? Russia's asking all the right questions and coming to all the right conclusions. But like I said in my video about Russia, I don't think the way they're going about trying to smash Scientology out of existence is the right way to go. So would it truly end them if they lost tax-exempt status? No, it wouldn't. Scientology could keep going. They certainly have enough money set aside in their reserves to pay those property tax amounts, at least for a few years, and it wouldn't wipe them out right away. But it would be the first in what would be a chain reaction of events that I believe would eventually wipe them out. Because losing that tax exemption, I think it would open them up to some other cases of a legal nature that might start piercing the corporate veil and calling into question some of their practices. And like I said, I'm not sure, I'm not 100% at all as to whether their employee payment system would then be called into question or not, or could be vulnerable, right? Because if they had to start paying all their church volunteers a minimum wage and paying taxes on that and also overtime and all that sort of thing, right? That would be a big hassle for Scientology. So I think it would open the door to those things, regardless of whether it did or not. The PR blow alone, the public relations problem that would create would be gigantic. And of course, if they lose tax-exempt status in the U.S., they're probably going to lose tax-exempt status in the other countries where they have it and really convert over straight up to a business model. But again, it's all kind of up in the air as to what would actually happen. This is all just supposition on my part. But I'm quite positive that losing tax exemption would be the beginning of the real end for organized Scientology. Sheila Bigelow, is Scientology effective against drug and alcohol addiction? Have people ever used Scientology to overcome drugs and alcohol and become clean and sober? Yes, people have used Scientology procedures and methods to overcome drug and alcohol addiction, and through Scientology's Narcanon program and through the church. That has been done. Is it what I would consider a fully effective 100% all the time program, like the Narcanon program? No, absolutely not. Narcanon doesn't have any greater success rate at getting people off drugs and alcohol than any other faith-based or science-based drug or alcohol addiction program. Now, there might be other ones out there that are better than Narcanon, but I know Narcanon's, they've claimed upwards of, 75, 76%, 80% success rate. Total nonsense, right? Those numbers have been shown to be absolutely not true. Does this mean that I'm sitting here saying that I think people should go do Scientology's drug and alcohol addiction programs, the Narcanon program or church programs, in order to overcome these things? No, definitely not. I look at faith-based programs or 12-step programs, which are, faith-based, right? It's a disciplinary point. It's a point of, placing yourself in the hands of a higher power and asking God to help you through, that. I think that's just as effective, right? And there's nothing being done there except the person having internal conversations and decisions, right? As my understanding of, say, Alcoholics Anonymous or something like that. So I'm not an expert on the full gamut of technology and methods and all that are used to get people off drug and alcohol addictions, but I know that Scientology is not any more effective than any of these other ones. And I wouldn't recommend it because of all the other baggage that comes with Scientology and with the Narcanon program. And of course, Hubbard's, I've made a whole video about the purification program, which is a key part of Scientology's drug and alcohol addiction, handling. And that purification program is dangerous, right? It should not be done. Period, right? For reasons I laid out in that video. So I think you're literally taking your health and maybe even your life into your hands when you go partake in that program. So that's a whole nother reason to just stay the hell away from that stuff. Have a lot of people done the Purif and survived? Yeah, of course. Do they, claim that is the reason that they're no longer, addicted to drugs or alcohol? Yeah. Is that the reason? I don't know. I think it's, like I said, I think it's as effective as a 12-step program in terms of, it's the person having internal conversations and decisions and discipline. So that's my take on that. Wagophile. My question is serious, and I hope you'll answer it. Although I'm not a Scientologist, my sister is, and has been very seriously for 30 years. Her neighbor is an SP, suppressive person, actually declared by the church. But I don't think my sister is aware of this, because like many Scientologists, she is very, very wary of all media and of the internet in particular. She's on friendly terms with my neighbor as a neighbor, but there's no social contact between them. There is, however, significant overlap between them and the form of the neighbor's dog, who has access to my sister's yard. Given that the dog is very charming and visits frequently, my sister has developed a real relationship with it. Do you think she'd flip out if she knew the dog's owner was an SP? I've never mentioned the fact for fear of pointlessly upsetting her. I can't imagine she'll ever change her perspective on Scientology, but then, on the other hand, I think, maybe learning that the dog's delightful owner is supposedly a terrible SP, that might cause cognitive dissonance sufficient to make her start thinking more critically. What do you think? Sounds like a silly question, but no, not really. your sister would absolutely positively, if she was a good Scientologist, disconnect from the neighbor immediately if she found out that he was an SP. And that means she would no longer be seeing the dog, because the dog is a connection to a suppressive person. And that would make her PTS, a potential trouble source. And right now she's already a potential trouble source. She just doesn't know it. So if she doesn't know it, then she can't be it as far as Scientology goes. Because I'm telling you, there are a lot of people in Scientology who are very, very PTS. They are connected to SPs, or connected to people who are connected to SPs through their family and their friends, and they don't even know it. You know, so many Scientologists have friends and family who are just waiting for the day that they will stop, you know, that they'll realize what a joke Scientology is and that they need to get out of it. And they're just waiting, right? That they have friends and family who have watched Going Clear, read books, seen magazines, read the internet, and the friends and family don't tell them. Because the friends and family know that if they do, the Scientologist is going to have to disconnect from them or put up walls and barriers and not be so close to them and that sort of thing. So they don't tell them. And so there's this hidden PTSness going on with Scientologists. I'm telling you, this is like, it's a thing. And the Scientologists are the last ones to know, because they think if nobody's saying anything, that everything's fine. You know, and they're just clueless. So as far as your neighbor goes and your sister goes, yeah, if your sister finds out that he's an SP, she's going to have to cut connection, all right, including with the dog. Now, I don't know how attached she is. I've only got your question here in terms of how attached she is to the dog, but I somehow doubt if she's been a Scientologist for 30 years that she's more attached to the dog than she is to the idea of personal spiritual immortality and personal freedom from, you know, the endless cycle of life and death. I think she'll sacrifice the dog before she'll sacrifice that. So I don't think it would necessarily be in her best interest or the dog's best interest or neighbor's best interest for you to be the one to tell her that her neighbor is a suppressive person. If she doesn't know, skip it, you know, and move on and let her just get on with her life. And if she finds out through some other means, you know, then fine, she finds out. And that's that. Jonathan Mark. In your book, Scientology A to Xenu, great title, you mentioned Scientologists being forced to do sec checks for perceived infractions. Leah Remini mentioned being charged $300,000 for a lengthy round of sec checks. What happens if the Scientologist who is subjected to those sec checks is tapped out because the Regs already separated him from his money? His home is triple mortgaged, his kids have no college funds, the 401k is gone, etc. Does the church sec check him anyway? How does it get Scientologists to pay for their mandatory sec checking if they literally have no more money? There's a policy letter that L. Ron Hubbard wrote called Free Service, Free Fall, where he expressly forbid the church to ever deliver services for free that should be paid for. I mean, they have introductory services when you walk in off the street that they'll give you for free. The testing and showing you some films, or maybe doing a lecture play or something like that. But when it comes to doing classes or courses, when it comes to getting auditing or sec checking, which is a kind of auditing, you pay. You have to pay. And if they don't make you pay, the staff get in a ton of trouble, right? So no free service. So this presents them with a conundrum when a Scientologist has to, you know, is ordered to sec checking, right? A security check, which is an interrogatory. They stick him on the meter, they ask him, you know, sharp and pointy questions, and they expect the person to, you know, cough up the answers and tell their deep, dark secrets and all the things that they've been doing that they are not wanting to tell anybody that they've been doing. That's a security check in Scientology. So if they have a problem where a person can't pay, and they work the guy over, like you've said in your question, and he's got no money, basically what happens is he's kind of just kicked out until he gets the money. And he's kind of considered persona non grata, right? Like, he's not, depending on the situation, there are lots of different situations where a person might need sec checking. Let's say the guy got in a lot of trouble. He did something, like he was on the internet or something, and they want to sec check him to get all the data about, you know, why he was on the internet, what he looked at, who he's been talking to, that sort of thing. Well, if they can't get that data from him because he can't pay for it, then they'll just tell him, okay, well, you go figure it out. You make it go right. You borrow the money from somebody or whatever. And if he can't, then he's not going to be allowed to come around in the church until he coughs up that money and pays for that sex checking. So he's basically, you know, kind of ostracized. If he's connected to, like, if he's got a wife or kids who also come into the church and do services, they also might start feeling some of that ostracizing and might start being, you know, being considered a problem because they're not handling him to handle himself, see? And the only way he's supposed to be handling himself is to pay the church money so he can confess his sins, right? And they, as his family members or his closest, you know, relations, are now going to be held responsible. Their feet's going to be held to the fire because realize that, of course, it's all about the money. And if the church can't get money from somebody, they're going to pressure the person to, you know, somehow figure out how to get that money so that he can, you know, avail himself of the church services. And Scientologists are all convinced that these services are the only thing that really matters. Hubbard makes it clear in the policies, and the church staff believe that there isn't anything else going on in the world that you could possibly give your money to that's more important than Scientology, right? And Hubbard said, you know, stocks, bonds, cars, houses, kids, college funds, all this stuff is of transitory. It's transitory and impermanent, and Scientology is the only thing that brings permanent, lasting gain that lasts forever. So, you know, when you scale these things out, you know, you weigh them out, you go, well, gee, I guess this Scientology really comes out ahead. And so that's the viewpoint that the pressure comes in on this person. And so if they're in a lot of trouble, you know, then they're not going to be allowed to come around in the church, and they're basically going to get short shrift. If it's just that the sex check is the person's next step, and it's not like he's really in a lot of trouble or something, then he can still come around and go to events, or maybe he's paid for some classes. He could still do those classes and that sort of thing, and he wouldn't quite be in so much trouble. And they would encourage him to get on a payment plan, something, anything, to keep flowing money to the church until he's got it paid for so that he can be saved. Hoy Peopleoy. Hi, Chris. A question about the stereotypical image of Scientologists whipping their cameras out. What do you think the decision process looks like before they send a Sea Org member storming out of an org to then just stand there and film protesters? Or what an individual Scientologist's idea is of what to do with such footage on his phone? It being Scientology, I'm sure there's some basis in LRH policy here. This might be a tactic used less these days, as it doesn't appear so much in recent protest videos. Okay, so filming critics or filming protesters. This is something, as far as I know, that developed, sort of as it rolled out, because it kind of evolved. Because, you know, in the 1950s and 60s, and I believe in the 70s, there wasn't a lot of that going on. I mean, and it wasn't really anything huge going on until Anonymous happened in 2008. And then it was like, oh my God, where did all these people come from with all these masks, right? And it just overwhelmed the church. There are two reasons that I'm aware of that the church does pull out a camera and start filming people who are protesting. One, they really do want to find out who these protesters are, because the church policies say to investigate people who are against Scientology, find their crimes. Hubbard says that there will actually be real crimes that they've committed, and that those crimes are to be found out and exposed so that the person will stop attacking Scientology. So there's that effort being made to find out who those individual protesters are and get their name, get their address, get their social security, get their ID, get everything about them, and dig up dirt on them and back them off through blackmail tactics. That is Hubbard's policy. And the church was overwhelmed in 2008 when thousands of protesters were coming out. So the church then made efforts to find out who the leaders or the organizers of these protests were, and find out what their crimes were and get them put in jail or get them prosecuted or get them blackmailed to back off. That tactic continues to this day, and they will always be trying to find out who protesters are and trying to shut them down, right? You show up in front of a church, they're going to come out and take your picture, and they're going to try to, you know, intimidate. And that's the second thing that's going on, is pure intimidation, right? They're out there in your face with a camera trying to, you know, get in your space and back you off and make you feel introverted, because a lot of people have that reaction when a camera is pointed at them, is they're uncomfortable with it. They don't like it. They go, what's going to happen with this film? Where is it going? What's going on with this, right? And it makes them uncomfortable and they, you know, turn tail and leave. That's the church's hope. So much so that, fairly recently there was a video posted, I think, I'm not sure if it was Angry Gay Pope or somebody went to the Los Angeles Blue Buildings, the PAC complex, and one of the OSA people came out and had the camera pointed, you know, and the protester was filming this person from OSA, filming him, and the person from OSA didn't even have the camera lens open and wasn't filming anything. So either that OSA person was so stupid that they didn't know to open the camera lens, or they were just purely trying to intimidate, right? And that's what it looked like to me, is they were right up there, you know, holding the camera up as though this was some big, you know, tactic to back or scare people. So those are the two things that I know of. Now, individual Scientologists, if they're not OSA, and they're not approved by OSA, they're not selected by OSA to do this work, then they are told, do not pay attention to protesters, ignore them. They're not supposed to film them, they're not supposed to get in their face, they're not supposed to engage with them in any way. And this is where you get what's called a curtain tech, or, you know, the avoidance, right? Where they won't look at the protesters, they won't engage with them, they won't talk to critics, they won't engage with critics. It's all, you know, no, I can't talk to you, I'm not going to talk to you, I can't look at this, I can't see this, I can't be part of this. So your run-of-the-mill Scientologist and your run-of-the-mill staff and even your run-of-the-mill Sea Org member, this is what they're told to do. So when we had protesters, for example, at Big Blue in LA, when I was staff there, I was never selected to go deal with these protesters. I was one of the general staff who had to hide. You know, we had to hide behind curtains. They put curtains up over the windows and locked all the doors. And in the Pacific base at Big Blue, there's underground tunnels under those buildings. I don't know if you know this or not, but there's a whole network of these things. So you can get from the building I was in, the from the advanced org or from the CLO, the management building, you can go underground under that tiled street, L. Ron Hubbard Way, and you can pop up in the other building where the main mess is, where people eat and stuff like that. And you can get around that base without ever going above ground. And so when protesters would show up, they would set up these routes and say, okay, you know, we're doing the drill, the security drill, and everybody go, okay, and all the public and the staff, this is how the street just gets emptied out, you know, have to go in these underground things, right? And it seems like they've been calming down on this a little bit. I don't know if, you know, after I left, if there were policy changes on this, because I've seen protesters go on L. Ron Hubbard Way, and then there's still public around, in lounging around in the cafe and stuff like that, whereas it used to be that they would clear that area out. So maybe they're not doing that so much anymore, but you'll definitely notice that none of those people are engaging with the protesters, ever. So only selected OSA, selected people, or OSA staff, the Office of Special Affairs, can interact with or engage with or start filming protesters. And so, like for example, if a protester comes and he's got a sign that has confidential OT stuff on it, like, you know, all hail Xenu, OT3 is all about Xenu, and this sort of thing, and throwing out this confidential information, OSA knows that they have to get a Scientologist who's already an OT to go deal with that person, because that person is spreading the confidential information around. And they want to hide that. They don't want the general run-of-the-mill Scientologists even seeing that stuff. So that's why they will sometimes select public Scientologists or staff who are OT, right, to go engage that person, try to distract that protester, try to get them off the property, however they can, or walk up with another sign and stand in front of the person's sign, right, that sort of thing. All these tactics that Scientology's developed. So they're trying to identify so that they can, you know, do the blackmail, and they're trying to intimidate. And that's what is going on with the protest stuff. Looks like it's time for Flash Answers. Ex-Fatboy. Hi, Chris. I have an opinion that David Miscavige is the best man to have as the supreme leader of Scientology. Anybody replacing him would be bad news. I say that because Scientology is and always has been a scam through and through, acts in destructive ways, and therefore we need it to cease to exist. David Miscavige's incompetent leadership and inability to understand the outside world keeps the church on track for its downfall, even though that is not his intention. The bad news is that because of him, people have to suffer, but because of him, Scientology is heading full steam ahead toward its demise. So I feel he is the best man for the job. My question, Chris, is do you agree? Yep, I agree with everything you said in your question there. And yes, I do believe that, in terms of, Scientology's demise, he's definitely leading the charge. Ms. Yoga Girl. It seems like there are countless policies and places for Scientologists to follow for every possible happenstance. How was Hubbard able to draft policies for every infinitesimally tiny detail? Was this something that he constantly updated throughout his life? Scientology, or rather Dianetics and then Scientology organizations, started up in 1950. And between 1950 and 1986, when L. Ron Hubbard died, 36 years, he wrote a lot of policies. He wrote policies, daily, almost daily, or revised existing policies. And when you look at 36 years worth of time, that's a lot of time. And so, yeah, he wrote all these policies over all that time. Other people also wrote policies in his name, which still exist, although they have his name on them, and people think Hubbard wrote them, but he didn't. And in fact, that's a lot of policies. There's way more than most Scientologists suspect. And so, so all of that was Hubbard's brainchild, and yeah, he worked on it all the time. Riggs BF. Dear Chris, as Scientology's numbers are dropping like a stone, do you think they will result to more drastic measures to recruit more followers, such as subliminal messages? I don't know about the efficacy of subliminal advertising or subliminal messages. From what I've read or looked at before in the past, I don't think that stuff actually works. But would they do that if they thought it would get more members? Oh, sure, you bet they would. They'd be involved in stuff like that. But as I've said before, actually, David Miscavige doesn't seem to care about getting new members and hasn't in many, many, many years. So it might be, the lower grade staff, the lower hierarchy staff who might engage in more desperate measures. But David Miscavige isn't going to, because he could care less whether new people are coming in. And so we've come to the end of another episode of our Critical Q&A. I hope that these answers and questions were of interest to you and were informative and educational and entertaining, as is the purpose of my channel. This channel is entirely, I am entirely fan-funded. So if you feel the urge, go ahead and click on the donate button or become part of my Patreon campaign. Your support is very, very, very much appreciated and allows me to continue to do my work. But regardless of that, thank you for coming around. Leave your comments, your feedback, your questions, anything at all in the comment section below. I do see all of it. I do read all of it. I am interested in all of it. Positive, negative, whatever. And also, you know, tell your friends and family about my channel. You know, I've got podcasts, I've now got movie reviews, as well as my regular content that gets posted up every Thursday, and as well as these Q&A videos. So, see you guys next week.